Now, what that whole relationship did, whether it was intentional or not, was to genericize, if that's a word I'm allowed to use here, to make generic a whole bunch of Tolkienian ideas and material, whether it's dark lords in towers or Balrogs or hobbits or rangers, whatever you want to call them. They became generic. They were no longer just Gandalf. There was some kind of generic wizard or magic user. Gandalf's a bad example because there's always been wizards. But there wasn't just Frodo. There were these generic halflings. They could have their own characters and so forth. This also happens in literature. And this is where you get the flood of what we could call derivative fantasy. And by derivative fantasy, I'll even name some names, even though it's mean, and even though I've enjoyed some of these derivative fantasies. The biggest of these, who we're actually going to talk about in some depth, is Terry Brooks, whose 1977, The Sword of Shannara, kind of opened the gates for the flood of derivative fantasy. There's a great many more. You could say David Eddings' Belgariad books, or any variety of kind of sword and sorcery, damsels in distress, monsters and dragons books that have come along. I would include even the very contemporary Aragon books as being very derivative. Someone, you have a kind of standard characters and standard problems, and you have to work with this. I would not, by the way, include J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter in the derivative fantasy, because even though it borrows a lot from traditional fantasy, is its own thing also. And we'll talk about that very briefly later on when we get to Tolkien's inheritors. So let me go back now to Terry Brooks and the Sword of Shannara, which people in the mythopoeic society and real aficionados of fantasy literature often call the Sword of Shannara to indicate how much they hate the book. Now, I don't hate The Sword of Shannara, and I remember reading it as a 9 or 10-year-old when it came out in the 70s, and enjoying it very much, because here was something that was at least recognizably Tolkienian. I mean, yes, you can read The Lord of the Rings over and over again, and I have. I've read The Lord of the Rings probably at least 40 times in my life, which is a little bit scary. But nevertheless, you want to read other things as well, not just reread the same books. And so The Sword of Shannara kind of allowed you to do both. It allowed you to reread The Lord of the Rings because it was such a slavish imitation of The Lord of the Rings, and yet it was a different book. But let's look at some of the similarities. There are pseudo-hobbits. In this case, they're called Valemen. They're not physically tiny, but they're also not big and brawny. And that's Shay and his brother Flick Ohmsford. So there's Frodo and Sam for you. Frodo and Sam aren't brothers, but it's very close to the same relationship. There's a wizard, Alanon. There are two heroic men, like Boromir and Aragorn in the company. You have Balinor and Menyon Lay. There's a gruff dwarf named Hendel, instead of Gimli, and two elf brothers named Durin and Dale. Okay, so here we have twin elf brothers instead of the one elf, but they're pretty similar. It's strange that the one elf is called Durin, since that's the king of the dwarves in Tolkien, but you can see the borrowing already going on, perhaps even subconsciously. There's an evil dark lord named the Warlock Lord, and there are evil black-cloaked minions who seem to be able to fly called Skullbearers, so they're the matchup for the Ringwraiths.